Coming into this session, Senator, there was a lot of talk about the need for ethics reform and some of the first bills that were heard in committee and some of the first bills on the other side of the Capitol to make it to the Senate have involved varying approaches to ethics reform. And it's one of those topics we hear about at least every other year.
Yes. Well, and of course, especially years after a year when there has been some ethic violation, and we had some pretty serious issues occur last year, and suddenly there are those that feel like we've got to do something even if it's wrong, kind of a thing, which I think from a legislative perspective is certainly not the right way to approach any issue. I guess, Dean, my position on ethics for some time has been that transparency is the most powerful approach to ethics. When we can provide our constituents with all the information that they think they're missing, then it's up to them to drive ethics reform. I think it's in the hands of the voters. Samuel Adams some years ago said the most promising method of securing a virtuous people is to elect virtuous leaders. And I think that should be in the hands of the voters. If they don't trust us, they should not elect us and certainly should not re-elect us. If they believe that we are practicing unethical behavior. And the best way for them to check up on ethics relative to lobbyist gifts or trips or anything like that is to be as observant as they can of the data that is available, which is all available on the Ethics Department website, or to demand more transparency. I'm supportive of transparency. It's always a little bit confusing to me when you distrust a group of people, let's say in this case legislators, and so you give those legislators more power to enforce higher ethics reforms on each other. And that's essentially what we do when we have government enact ethics reform, is we're saying, well, we don't trust government, so we want government to be more attentive to government. And I think that is part of what's missed there. Even George Washington said, without religion, the government of a free people cannot be maintained. And I think that's another statement about examining the hearts, examining the character of those that we elect. And if that character is suspect, then that's the point at which the voters need to take responsibility for ethics reform. I tend to be in opposition of a lot of, quote, ethics reform, unquote, unless it has to do with additional transparency.
In the last, I would say, year especially, but it's been growing over some time now, there's been this move to, for lack of a better term, neutralize gender. And it's starting to play out in different ways in different cities, and I think it depends on the philosophical bent of that specific area. But you've introduced some legislation trying to get ahead of this gender equality, gender inequality, whatever issue.
I appreciate your addressing it as, I think you said, gender neutrality. It's really the removal of gender, which is hard to even imagine. Imagine how that works, given everything else, not just in nature, but in law. I can't even imagine how this eventually plays out in the courts when a person is, I guess, convicted of a DWI and they come before the judge and their argument is that they didn't really feel impaired. And so the fact that there was a measurement that said they were, or that there was some other indication that they were, that has all to be set aside because in their mind, they were not impaired. But we still have to acknowledge that these things are going on. The courts have issued opinions, and our schools, our public institutions, are in the middle of these two pressing issues. On the one hand, what has always been considered common sense and what you could observe and feel and measure, and on the other hand, what the courts have said they have to comply with. What's at issue here, fundamentally, is the safety of the students. Senate Bill 720, which I have introduced and is comparable to a bill by Representative Bratton in the House, they're very similar. I don't know exactly how they may differ. But the goal of both of those is to make sure that the students are safe in the educational environment within the walls of the public system. And it just simply defines how a student's restroom privileges would be decided. And if there was a conflict with those restroom privileges, that with the parent's consent, the school can make other arrangements for a student who may be a male in terms of their birth certificate and their DNA and their physical characteristics. But they're saying, despite what you can see and touch and measure, I'm thinking differently, and therefore I am different, and therefore I don't want to go to the men's restroom. It instructs the schools that they must make accommodations for those young people, and with parental consent, they can give them special accommodations. And it's reaching the rural areas because it's not just a city issue. I've talked to some superintendents in my district. There's not a large number. I think one school of maybe a couple of thousand students had one student that claimed they were transgender. Another superintendent, I think he said they may have had seven or eight that claimed they were transgender, which surprised me a little bit. I didn't think there would be that many, even in a school the size that he superintends, but it's something they have to deal with. Right now, they feel very pressured to make accommodations. What 720 is designed to do is to give the schools some options that will provide for the safety of their students, and at the same time not expose them excessively either to much, much higher costs or the threat of lawsuits.
Even though this is a rule that would have passed, would come from the state, it again gives the freedom and direction to each individual school district. It's not a mandate from the state. It's an allowance, as it were.
That's exactly right. It defines kind of the parameters and says, given these circumstances, if you're faced with this circumstance, then you must accommodate it. You can either provide separate restroom facilities. You can have a restroom facility that is sectioned off for individuals or whatever you're able to accommodate. A lot of times, school could simply make the faculty restroom available to someone who did not fit anywhere else, at least physically and mentally combined, did not fit somewhere else. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to protect the safety of the students. I've had one, not a parent, but one person who knows a parent who has a child in this situation. And the comment was, you know, if this young man goes into a men's restroom and the others know there, he could just get beat up, because sometimes kids are very intolerant. There's truth to that, and that's a safety issue. And certainly the school doesn't want that to happen. Those of us in elected office do not want that to happen. And so this is an attempt to make sure those kind of incidents do not occur in our public institutions.